And we have first a public hearing, I guess, since we've not heard this bill yet, on Senate Bill 231. I'll open the public hearing, and Mazen, if you could give us the overview. Deborah, are you speaking for the department on the bill? Yeah, it's your bill. Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Chair. This started as a Department of Revenue bill way back in the Senate, and then amended, and it primarily talks about the practice the Department of Revenue uses in compromising and giving or eliminating penalties and waiver deductions of $50 and less.
I'm sorry, Mazen, it's Saturday morning. Could you...
Done.
No, I just, you know, lively.
Okay.
There we go.
Good morning. This delightful Saturday morning. We would welcome everybody here.
Ah, you're talking.
Keep it going, man.
Hey. Now, what the fuck?
Deborah, hey.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, I apologize. I have also lost track of where we were in the process on this bill, and I don't have written testimony for you, so I will simply speak to it. You have, the legislature has given us the authority to waive interest and penalty on a finding of good and sufficient cause. We were in the process of adopting an administrative rule to provide for waiver of penalty for a first-time offense for a taxpayer. So you consider someone who has filed timely for 20 years and then all of a sudden misses the deadline for no good reason. And our attorneys advise us we might not be able to do that waiver because there isn't actually good and sufficient cause for missing the deadline. So we have come to you with legislation asking whether give us the authority to adopt such rules, and that is what Senate Bill 231 does.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions for Deborah? Committee, perhaps to no surprise, the real action on this bill will be in the amendments. And I think, as I mentioned before we convened, my intention this morning is to get a running start on this bill. We'll hear some testimony on proposed amendments. We'll not take action on the bill this morning, but we'll recess today to take action probably later in the day. But this bill will become a vehicle, I think, for some of the pickup and cleanup amendments of things that we need to do as we wind the session down. So we'll keep the bill in chief, but we'll also want to pay attention to amendments that are going to be presented to us today. Thank you, Deborah. Unless there's any questions, your part seems pretty straightforward. All right. We have amendments before us, and what I think I'll do is take them in first with Representative Butler. You're here with Mike Graney on the, was it the Dash 12s?
The Dash
6s. Dash.
Not
12s.
The National Guard.
It's
Dash
16.
Well,
Dash
16. Okay. Are you here on the 12s or 16s?
12.
Okay. Oh, 12. You go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Tom Butler from House District 60. Within House District 60, there are a few dams that generate hydroelectricity, and I just called to your attention in the A-12 amendment, what we have done is that we have asked that the renewable energy resource, which presently does not include hydroelectric generating facility larger than 1 megawatt, of installed capacity, unless the facility qualifies as a research, development, or a demonstration facility. We've amended that to also add then, or is completed after August 1st, 2001, on a dam or reservoir that already was in existence on August 1st, 2003. I have a group of constituents. First of all, there's some rebuilding on some of the dams presently, and I have some constituents who are in the process of trying to assist to have those rebuilds updated on the larger dams so that we can generate more renewable energy out of the existing dams. So that's what this proposal, the A-12 proposed amendment does, and I have asked Mike Graney to come down from the Department of Energy to further give you an explanation on the reason and the potential of this amendment.
Okay. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Mike Graney, Director of the Department of Energy. I'm Glad to be here this beautiful Saturday morning also. This amends our business energy tax credit program and removes the limit of 1 megawatt that is on hydroelectric facilities, and it removes it only for those that where there's already an impoundment or a dam in place. And this is a restriction that we don't have on our other incentive programs, like our low interest loan program. We've made a number of loans to irrigation districts for small hydro, and these are typically in the range of 5 to 10 megawatts for generation, again, at existing facilities. The importance of the business energy tax credit is that while the that there are some private developers too that would that as Representative Butler mentioned are interested in adding generation to some of these sites or replacing and upgrading them. I think this makes good sense from an energy point of view. The facilities would continue to have to meet any environmental DEQ, Fish and Wildlife requirements, and it's limited to existing dams and impoundments. And it doesn't change the amount of the business tax credit. You've already dealt with that in another bill. It doesn't make any changes here. This is just what qualifies in terms of eligibility.
Question I have, it doesn't change the amount of the credit, but in terms of changing eligibility, is there a revenue impact from this? Or Mazen, have you looked at this?
I have not seen the amendment before.
I would presume there would be some. I would think it would be small because typically we see maybe one or two of these facilities every couple of years, and a facility would be in the range of probably $5 million or so. So the tax credit taken over 5 years would be, depending on the year, 5 to 10% of that.
Okay. So maybe between now and the next time we meet on this, Mazen, if you could talk to Mike and see if you could nail down what our revenue impact might be.
Okay.
Any questions? All right, thank you very much. I'm sorry, Representative Virgil.
But I do notice that it includes wind power.
Well, that's existing, Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, that's existing statute. So this program covers all renewable resources, and as well as energy conservation for businesses. The only size restriction is on hydro, so simply changing that.
Okay, thank you very much. Who is here on the nines?
City of Portland.
Marge, you want to just my understanding the nines is okay. I think it's 2379.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Marge Kafori, representing the City of Portland. The dash nines that are going in the 231 are the low-income housing tax credit that the city introduced many, many months ago as House Bill 2379. It was heard in this committee. It was passed out of the committee. It went to the House floor where it received 57 votes. It went over to the Senate. Some amendments were added to the bill from Boley having to do with fair housing tax credits. It then became a hostage in the Senate for some other issues that were rolling through the Senate. It was finally released. It came back to the House, and the amendments ran into some difficulties, I understand it, on the House side. So the original underlying bill of 2379 that this committee passed a number of months ago is now the dash nine amendments.
Okay. All right. Any questions for Marge? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going numerically. Who's here on the 13s? Come on forward.
Mr. Chair, Dave Fiska, I'm here representing Providence Health System, including the PACE program within Providence. We appreciate the ability to try to use Senate Bill 231 to solve a problem that developed inadvertently and at the last minute on House Bill 2152, where language was included in that bill dealing with the proposed tax on managed, now not proposed, in the now tax on managed care entities. As a surprise to some of us here at the table, what got melded into that in an unfortunate and inadequate way was a tax on the PACE program, which, as you remember from House Bill 2182, if I have the right number, was dealt with in two ways by this committee. The nursing facility tax rode on its own, and the PACE tax rode on its own as related. The objective in the Dash 13 amendments is to propose to remove the language that's in 2152, which would have had the effect of subjecting the PACE program to a tax with no benefit at the other end. As part of the agreement at with the Senate Revenue Committee, as well as we understand with House leaders, the agreement was that we could seek a fix in a vehicle. We found one. That's why we're here today. I would leave my prepared testimony if you want, but Mr. Chair, with that, I'll stop, and my colleagues may want to add some perspective to what I've just said.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brett Salmon with the Oregon Healthcare Association. Just to add a little bit, it was always our intent that PACE be kept kind of at its own program because it's funded in a different way than the fully capitated health plans, and so this will solve that problem, and then we will run the PACE program in a separate bill.
Okay. That was the way we intended when they do to operate when we look at it. Yeah.
Right. Mr. Chair, Mike Dewey representing the fully capitated health insurance plans, referred to as FCHIPS. We had agreed to tax ourselves to leverage federal dollars. We saw the bill in the Senate at 4:15 on Sunday last week, and it passed out around 4:30. Came over to you, and you passed the bill, so we didn't have an opportunity to look at all the amendments in that particular bill, and there's merely a date change from 30 days to 75 days. That helps us from the administrative side and cues up the payment that we make and the reimbursement so that we're not floating additional revenue, if you will, to the department. So it basically evens up the payment, and the department is agreeable to do that.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions for these gentlemen?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I'm just being very cautious. Has this been vetted with the people who are working on the federal issues?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I think the answer to your question is yes. It's been vetted with everybody. These issues we're talking about today, as well as some others, may end up being in another consensus vehicle yet to move in this session. So at the moment, with what we're saying to you, everybody is on board on both sides of the aisle, legislature, both chambers, as well as the administration.
Okay. I'm
does that answer your question?
I think so. I'm just trying to make sure we don't get afoul of the federal regulators and lose the whole program as a result of it. And I think you've told me that that's not a problem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I believe the under answer to your question is yes, this has been vetted by the attorneys from the Department of Justice as well as Legislative Council Office who are cognizant of the federal regulations and laws. So I believe the answer is yes, this piece of the action that you'll be asked to take in the next hours does not run afoul of federal rule or law.
All right. Thank you very much. Is anyone here on the Dash 14s? Mason, do you know the Dash 14s?
Mr. Chair, this is a fix, almost a technical fix also by the DHS, Department of Human Services, allows them to audit the records for period of 5 years. This was requested by them as a fix for House Bill 2152 as well.
And this relates to what part of 2152? Is this the nursing home? Is this the provider
right.
tax as well?
Right.
Okay. All right. How about the A15s?
A15s, Mr. Chair, is also of the same nature. The only thing, this comes from the Department of Revenue. This is a fix by the Department of Revenue. It adds a couple ORS references into 2152, and it specifies at one point which date the S corporations would file rather than the 15th. It was open, now it's the 15th day of the month. As a due date, the same as a federal return is required. So this is also a technical fix.
Okay.
can't be exciting with the technical fixes, Mr. Chair.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. We're losing our audience anyway.
What did we?
The dash 16s. Anybody here on the dash 16s? No, Matt, do you want to explain what they are?
Mr. Chair, the dash 16s deal with an issue that obviously came up as a result of the activation of the National Guard and the reserves for mobilization to the war. And as this happens under federal law, they move from title so-and-so to title 10, going from 23 to title 10, and they become employees or get paid by the federal government. And under that, since they were outside, or they will be outside the state, they don't usually get taxed on those earnings from federal payroll. However, the 1249th Engineering Battalion, seemed to have found itself doing the Umatilla and working in Oregon rather than being deployed to the Middle East, and therefore they are gaining income from the federal government in Oregon, which makes them subject to Oregon tax. This bill tries to exempt that income or take it away from the consideration of income for that period of 2 years at this time.
This was a group that was called up for overseas deployment, and then turned out they were deployed to Umatilla instead.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
They found the WMDs.
Weapons of mass destruction.
There are a bunch.
Okay, and we could. At my request, I asked Ed Mazin to put a sunset on this because this is directed to a very specific group of National Guard reserves who were supposed to have been deployed overseas and ended up. Until instead, they're spending the same amount of time. They're just not doing it in quite as exotic a location. Okay, are there any other amendments for our consideration this morning? We'll see if we have any as the day goes on. I think at this point, committee, I'll recess. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 231, and I'll recess the meeting. Please stay close to your phones. We'll convene at some point here, I'm sure, later in the day, and we'll just let you know as soon as we're able in advance of the meeting. And if you are going to be away from your phone but you have a cell phone, you may want to let Kathy know what your cell phone is so she can reach you on your cell phone. I mean, we won't do this on 5 minutes' notice, but I want to make sure that if you're planning on being away for a little while, you'll know in advance. Yes, Representative.
Chair, I would just like to know the fiscal impact on any other amendments.
Oh, yes, sure. So far, we don't have any revenue impact, do we?
The only one, Mr. Chair, is not...
The energy one, potential.
Right. And then the A-16, the National Guard one, but that's about $60,000 only for 2 years.
What is this $5
million? That,
well, that's the local option property tax impact. So that's not a state general fund. That's
okay.
That's a local option property tax impact.
It's a city portion.
Yeah. All right, committee, we will be in recess then until called back. it looks like the most of what we need is before us in Senate Bill 231. So my intent, if we can today, is to go ahead and move this out and maybe even get it to the floor for the afternoon session. So let me open up the work session on Senate Bill 231. We heard the bill before us, and what I guess I'll do is just going to take these amendments one at a time and test the temperature of the water as we go. We have first the A9 amendments. That was the restoration of the language from House Bill 2379, rescuing that from the more complicated issues that have that bill in conference committee. The chair would move the A9 amendments to House Bill Senate Bill 231. Is there any discussion on that? Any objection? Okay. A9s are in. Next committee, A12s were the amendments proposed this morning by Representative Butler and Mike Graney. And Mazin, you have a revenue impact on that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, the A12 it includes the electricity generation on existing dams to be given the 35% of cost tax credits for turbines installed on that.
Does everyone have those, or am I the only one missing?
I don't have it. Do you have a copy, or?
I guess.
Did you intend to have them copied?
I intended to have a copy.
You've got it.
I've got a Senate Bill 231-A9, and it says A16.
No, these are the A12s. No. Revenue impact statement. Let's get that copied. We can do the others. And do you have one for the 16s then, too? We could.
The 16s
We've got the 16s.
Okay. Well, I don't have those.
You don't have this?
What do we need to have copied? So we've got everything that we need.
Yeah, I'll copy that one. Right, you've been here.
That would help.
Oh, 9, 16s and 12.
Yes. Oh, I do. Okay. Never mind. I got it.
Oh, they send it on the 8th. Yeah.
The A16s should be in the earlier one.
It's the A12 that I don't have.
Right. Okay, tell you what. Let's take a look at the A13s. That's the Providence and Pace technical fix. Those are still alive and still needed. Chair would move adoption of the -13 amendments. There's no revenue impact to those. The chair would move adoption of the A13 amendments to Senate Bill 231. Is there any discussion on that motion? Any objection? All right, that one's in. The A14s, Representative, says a technical amendment also relating to the medical provider tax in House Bill 2152, and no revenue impact on that. Okay. Chair would move the -A14 amendments to Senate Bill 231. Is there any discussion? Any objection? And they are in. The A15s are the Department of Revenue technical fix, again, to House Bill 2152 relating to the filing date for S-Corporation returns. No revenue impact on that. All right. Any chair would move the -A15s to Senate Bill 231. Is there any discussion? Any objections? All right. The A15s are in. And then let's wait just a second until we get the impact statements.
The E16 would be included in the impact statement.
Yeah.
That was in the morning. So.
Oh, okay. Well, let's
pass that in the morning.
Okay. Then that one was the $60,000.
Right.
Okay. Committee, what's your pleasure on that?
So the A9, it's in with the A16 as far as the revenue, so does it?
A9 doesn't have a general fund revenue impact. That has the that's a local property tax option, so the revenue impact there is to local property taxes, and it's the one that's optional with the local jurisdictions.
So this impact study that we have here doesn't really refer to A9 because it says A9, A16.
Mazin?
Yeah, Senator Scott, the 4.5 million that we have is that the local City of Portland, Multnomah County impact that is in the schedule that you have down here. The A16 would be the smaller one in the bottom, and in the revenue impact line or the caption on top, it says the general fund loss of about $60,000 for the 2003-05 biennium, because the time limit for that amendment is only for 2 years. So it only impacts the 2003-05 biennium.
Okay,
so it does impact it by 60.
Yeah, the A16s have a $60,000 general fund impact. Committee, what's your pleasure? We didn't hear any testimony in favor of these amendments this morning. I'm sensitive to what they are. I'm kind of open to the committee's lead on this. It's $60,000.
Who is, Mr. Chair, who is seeking this?
Where did this come from, Mazen? You had an email.
It was actually a fax to you, Mr. Chair.
It came from you.
No, it wasn't from no. It was faxed to me.
Mr. Chair, I recall having. I did have a conversation with Colonel Caldwell from the National Guard about.
That's right.
About these amendments, and I think they have determined that they had a group of people that are currently right now on active duty that they believe were going to be either up at Fort Lewis or shipped overseas, who got reassigned to be doing duty at Umatilla, and they're not with their families. They're not in a position to continue to do their regular activity because they are on active duty, but they're within the state, so they don't get the benefit of the tax break that the other people in their unit who did get either kept at Fort Lewis or sent overseas are actually getting. And I think their sense was that this was a reasonable accommodation to try to lessen the burden for these group of servicemen who have been called up and are doing this active service. So that was my brief understanding of it from my conversation with Colonel Caldwell.
It was Colonel Caldwell that brought the amendments to me. Representative Williams, do you want to move them?
Sure, I'd be happy to move them. I'll move the -A16 amendments to Senate Bill 231.
All right. Representative Williams moves the -A16 amendments to Senate Bill 231. Is there discussion on that motion? Any objection? All right. The A16s are in. And now we're back to the A12s. Mazen, if you could tell us the... take us through the revenue impact on that.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The A12, as we try to quickly find what the impact would be on those. There's a 35% of cost credit over the 5 years, and this goes as 10% for the first 2 years and 5% the third, fourth, and fifth year. And those facilities, or these turbines, if you will, that will be installed on existing dams will produce about between 5 and 10 megawatts of electricity. They will cost anywhere between $2 to $5 million each. I took the average cost to be about $3 million, and seeing them as coming two per year. And once we stagger those through the time for the first year, second year, and so on, if they keep coming at that rate, we saw about $3.3 million into the impacts as the credits coming to the general fund.
Well, committee, speaking for myself, as salutary as this is, I think 3.3 to 3.5 million is getting a little bit steep to pile on at the tail end without some accommodation in other budget or revenue. But okay. Sorry, Mike. Okay, then we'll not move the -12s. Just imagine if I could double check. We have the 9s, 13s, 14s, 15s, and 16s in the bill. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. Chair, move Senate Bill 231 as amended then to the floor with a pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Griffin?
Aye.
Horn?
Aye.
Horn?
Aye.
Hoffman?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Freeman?
Aye.
Griffin?
Aye. Senate Bill 231 goes to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Committee, we will reconvene at 4 o'clock. Is that just, I hope, a little bit more to do? Since we're not meeting tomorrow, I thought we'd try and do that today, so we'd be all done for Monday. Okay? With that, we're adjourned. Recess. Do I need? I think I said recessed until 4 o'clock. That's what I said. Yeah.
'Tween. Keeping the current law at $600,000 exemption, going to $1 million exemption, and going on up to the $3.5 million exemption, and essentially in the year 2009, just that 1 year, not the biennium, the difference between going to $3.5 million and going to $1 million is $20 million. Now, as you'll recall, we're just in the foothill. We're not even yet to 2015. So we're just at the kind of hitting the late middle age, if will, of the first baby boomers, and all this is ahead of us. So that's why it's important from a long-term tax policy perspective. Second, there are some very substantial philosophical issues embedded in the estate tax. The estate taxes, many of you are probably aware, fills a number of roles. One of those roles is as a substitute for capital gains. At some point in our national legislative history, we found it was quite difficult to establish basis for capital gains. So if I bought property or stock and bonds in my life and passed them on to my family, it becomes very difficult for my family after I'm deceased to necessarily establish when those were purchases and what the basis is. And that role of substituting for capital gains is a very, very critical role, because otherwise we create a world in which you basically avoid taxes from one generation to the next and the following without ever paying your capital gains tax. And the so that is substantial. And the many people, leaders in the capitalist world, such as Warren Buffett, have addressed this at some length and said, you know, if I weren't, and more, this is a story Warren Buffett shares that I'd like to share with you. He says, if I was born on the east side of Peru, I would never have made a dollar. And what he's referring to, and as he himself expounds, we each benefit from an enormous infrastructure paid for by our fellow Americans. And that infrastructure makes it possible for us to make a lot of money in this country. But then, as Buffett and people like Bill Gates Sr. and many others have noted, it shouldn't be possible for those who benefit the most from this structure not to participate when it comes time to pay their capital gains, and that it should pay their share, and thus they support the estate tax. I would like to ask the committee to consider a couple of directions that differ a little bit from the direction the chair has proposed. One issue is, given the fact that it is a very late hour and this is an issue of substantial gravity, I would like to propose that the committee consider sunsetting this legislation so that it sunsets effectively the end of this biennium, so it could be considered in the next legislative session the appropriate way to go forward. I'd like to note that if we set up on a path that raises these exemptions to $3.5 million, and we turn around and say, you know what, that really wasn't the wisest path, either in a revenue sense or in a philosophical sense, it will be very difficult to turn the path back, because we'll be up against the three-fifths rule for increasing revenue if we lower the exemption level back down to $1 million. So That would be one possible way to accommodate the carefully prepared plan that the chair has laid out.
I wouldn't call it carefully prepared.
thoughtfully.
Okay. Oh, that might be a stretch.
Would be to say, well, let's stick with that plan, but let's sunset at the end of 2003-05 or the end of 2007 fiscal year, so that the law automatically goes back to the current law, and we can therefore go forward from there, having a chance to reconsider before we get caught by this three-fist trap about whether this legislation proposed before us is the right path or not. Another option I would lay out for the committee is to take the amendment that I have passed out to you, which is the A-10, and it's framed within House Bill 2704, so it would have to be conceptually converted. This is written as a gut and stuff, so obviously it would just replace the components of the estate tax that you have in Senate Bill 362. And what this says is, let's raise the limit to $1 million, and this is the exemption limit. And that exemption limit in going to $1 million is nearly doubling it from $600,000 today. And for a two-parent family, that means that essentially I have $2 million, and if I split that between the two, I never have to file an estate tax with the state of Oregon, nor does my wife. And moreover, if I do earn more than $1 million or have more than $1 million in estate to pass on, I only have to pay taxes on that amount above $1 million. And this has in it a clause that mimics the federal clause. You'll see in the good chair's language something that is an interesting little clause. It's a little bit confusing, and it's not the chair's fault because this is related to the federal. And it says, where did it go? Is this the A6 amendment that you're working with?
A5.
I'm sorry. Maybe I was looking at... Can I get a copy of the A5? I think there's a clause that says the lower of the federal tax or the number according to the following calculation. And I have worked with Mr. Johnson in legislative council to produce a tax credit structure, and Elizabeth, thank you very much for your help, that mimics that part of the federal tax that allows us then to disconnect so that our state calculation does not create this complicating interaction between the state and the feds, where the feds' legislation is changing each 2 years, and when are we tied into it, and so on and so forth. That has already caused a great deal of confusion for the body, for the our State Department of Revenue. They have wrestled with states that are closed and whether they have to go back and open them and that sort of thing. Well, this lays out a very, you'll see, if I could ask you to turn to page 4, top of the page.
Of your amendment?
Of my amendment. This is the 2704-10. And you'll see, in case of decedents dying on or after January 1st, 2005, and you see a table, and there is no tax between $0 and $1 million. There is a tax at $1 million of $36,560, but just below under 3A and B, you'll see that there is a credit that is calculated, and that credit is also $36,560, so still at $1,000,001, you don't pay anything, if you will. And then that credit phases out over the first $100,000 over $1 million, mimicking the effect of that clause that I was referring to in the legislation that the chair has presented to you. This then results in no reference to the feds. It's nice, clean, Chris. And what it says is, for now, we're going to go forward at $1 million. And so that would be a second option. One, to sunset the chair's legislation so we can reconsider this and make sure we're on the right track 2 or 4 years from now. A second, to say, you know, going to $1 million would be a very good thing for the state of Oregon. Weights have been put in this as copying the chair's model. Those weights you'll see are different for 03 and 04. They are 1.14. And the 1.14 weight is lower because more people are paying the tax. And so we're not raising the tax as high on those for estates over 1.5 or subsequently $2 million. And also, there's a multiplier for 2002, and I believe that mimics the chair's legislation, and not sure of the most recent copy, A5. And I think you have a weight in yours. And is your weight, good chair, 1.5 something?
1.38
for 2002?
Oh, 3.4. No.
1.34.
Is that right, Elizabeth?
3.4 for 03.
03, yeah.
And 04, it's 3.8.
Okay. Well, then that weight really is the identical weight for the same reasons, just rounded off slightly differently. And there was an earlier draft that had a higher weight, and the department did ask for the lower weight because otherwise they'd have to reopen estates that have been closed, and we're avoiding that situation. So personally, I would like to encourage you to consider either of those two. I'd be perfectly happy with either of those two options. I believe in the million-dollar option. I feel if my and my wife compile on this earth an estate of over $2 million, and after we give away gifts and so forth, we still have over $2 million, that it would be very, and a lot of that is probably capital gains on investments. And I feel it's completely appropriate for us to participate in giving back to the community that provided the infrastructure for us to so prosper on this planet and in this good nation. And that, colleagues, is my case, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Question not for you, but for Elizabeth, do you have, or can we have on Monday, a comparable schedule of impacts and revenue on Representative Merkley's amendment?
Yeah, Chairman Federley, you know, in 03, 05, there's no revenue impact on it either.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's why he has the multipliers. Yeah. So, again, in 05 is where it began because he doesn't have the multipliers anymore. So it's just, it's not very much. It's like $5 million or something going from $600,000 to the $1 million.
All right, questions for Representative Merkley, Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Merkley, are you saying that the sunset to which you referred would go to if the dash fives were introduced rather than your particular dash tens? I know the different bill numbers, but you know what I mean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hobson. I was suggesting a sunset in the context of the Chair's amendment so that we could rethink tying to EGTRA. We could see what the feds do. We could continue the conversation about the philosophy behind the state tax. Is it capital gains or is it, as others contend, double taxation? I mean, it's really an interesting thing when you sink your teeth into it. And by setting that sunset, we would not be trapped into a schedule that's continuously ascending. There are many. It would still be appropriate to also go to $1 million under the route I've suggested and sunset that would be appropriate too. Yet another approach would be to meld the two and go with the good chair's plan, but say, well, that may be let's give ourselves a chance to rethink that and let's go back to the $1 million level in January 1st, 2005. And if we don't like that at time, we can decide again to increase it. That would be another way to go. There is an advantage to that plan I'd like to note, which is that there is an embedded issue here of how difficult is it to have different levels at the federal level and the state level for estates to be filed. And there are a number of states that currently have created a distinction between themselves and the federals, including Washington State. But because across the country, until very recently, everyone operated under the premise that we were just going to capture the credit allowed at the federal level. This is a new thing for states to do, and there's a process of education. If we were to take the chair's approach, where we indeed match for 2 to 4 years, we then give the department time to follow what's going on in other states and wrestle with this question of creating an efficient way to capture estates where a different level is required to file at than at the federal level.
All right. Other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Hass.
Does he know the exemption level in the states of Washington or California?
I think it's 700,000 in Washington. I'm not sure about California.
They've connected with the 97 law changes, so it will go up to $1 million in Washington State.
And California?
I don't remember with California.
I think they bonded theirs. All right, thank you, Representative Merkley. Lori Wimmer Whalen.
They're ready for coming.
You may.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. To the record, Lori Wimmer Whalen with the Oregon Education Association. I'd like to take a view from the 30,000-foot level, if I might, with respect to the revenue and budgets that you are all grappling with in these closing days of the session. We'd like to commend you for all the hard work you've done to try to build a bridge to the end of the 2005 biennium with the revenue package you all just passed. And I'd like to remind you that while that was a huge mountain you climbed, it would be a shame if in 2006 it just led us to the Grand Canyon. And one of the things that we're concerned about are the out-year impacts of the Dash 5 amendments, both with respect to the estate tax changes you're contemplating and also the venture capitalists, which we all fondly refer to as the Habig Spenders Bill. It would be our position that making technical fixes to the estate tax law is rational and necessary, and we support that, as well as perhaps raising to the $1 million threshold, but we do not support raising to the 3.5 and connecting to the feds, and also we oppose the venture capitalist piece. With that, I'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Tim?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tim Nesbitt to the AFL-CIO in Oregon. Quickly, again, we've expressed our opposition on the Senate side to the venture capitalist piece. Please keep in mind that in Oregon, even an unemployed family pays some income taxes. A minimum wage family pays some income taxes. It seems to us to be a slap in the face to those families to say if you have enough money and you're a big investor that you shouldn't pay any income taxes on your income. Secondly, in regard to the estate tax, I want to echo what Lori said. We applaud you for the vote you took on the package this week. And under that package, by our estimation, working families in Oregon are going to pay about $700 million more over the next 3 years. And it's going to be done in a progressive way. We can certainly support that. We strongly support it. But the understanding was that you needed all of that $700 million to keep schools open full-time and fund the services we care about over these next 3 years. And from all projections, you're going to need every dollar in 05-07, in 07-09, until we come up with tax reform that can give us a more adequate and stable tax system, and hopefully one that's more fair as well. As a result, you heard a lot of people from the Revenue Coalition talking to you week after week in the early weeks of the session about how we can't afford to give away more money. I think that counts double now. We're going to be telling our members, we're going to be telling the voters potentially, that it's only fair to pay a little bit more now because we need the extra funds to keep our schools open. This is not a time to be making other cuts in the revenue base in the inadequate funding we have right now for the services we care about, absent an effort at some future date to give us a more stable and more fair tax system.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
Lori?
One other point I wanted to make. In my reading early on this session when you were considering the venture capitalist bill, I read that, and I'm not certain if this is factual, but it was in the newspaper, it must be true, that the problem with the venture capital situation is not that a lack of venture capital, but rather a lack of projects to fund with it. And if that is the case, this is not the right solution for the problem as so stated.
Okay. Any questions for these two? All right, thank you very much. Anybody else wish to be heard today on either the Dash A5s or the A10s? And we'll talk about this again on Monday. Elizabeth, or no, Paul, who has the A6s? Is that you? Paul, and as Paul is coming, go ahead, Elizabeth. As Paul is coming up committee, obviously the conundrum we have here is in maintaining revenue neutrality, you've got to. You do essentially have a shift from the estates under $1 million to estates more than $1 million, and then going forward on that, I think the choice we have to grapple with between now and Monday is to what extent, how far we want to make that shift. I think you see the impact of that on the fiscal sheet that Lizbeth has for us. And obviously the farther we go in connecting with the exemption level, then the greater the shift to estates that are above that exemption level, minimizing the revenue impact, and to the extent that we keep the exemption level lower, well, then we have a lesser impact on the estates that are taxed. That's about the right trade-off, right, Paul?
Correct.
Yeah. And it would be nice to be able to start from scratch on this thing, but we are in the middle of the wave with the fact that we already have the $1 million problem because of the fact that we are not connected to the current tax threshold. So it's going to be a tough one. But we'll talk about that again on Monday morning. Okay? Paul.
Mr. Chair, the A6 amendments should look familiar to you. It's Senate Bill 313, which came to you from the Senate Revenue Committee and that you reviewed some time ago. What these amendments do, what the original 313 does is establish a credit program for the to fund the Oregon Production Investment Fund, and the tax credit program would be monitored by the Oregon Film and Video Office, and they would sell tax credits to corporations that would make contributions to the fund, and then the Film and Video Office would then use those dollars to defray the costs of film production in Oregon. And so they would certify those costs, and it could be up to 10% of the total cost of production. So that was the plan of the Film and Video Office. Originally, this bill came in the form of Senate Bill 79, which would have been a lottery allocation. It was then converted to the tax credit program, and now you see it in that form. The A6 amendments have two changes in them, and they have to do with the dates. On page 4, under section 13, that this act now applies to tax years beginning January 1, 2005, and those tax credit certifications cannot be taken. Those that have made the contributions to the fund and gotten the credit cannot use those credits on their Oregon returns until after July 1, 2005. The bill does retain the $1 million limit, and that's back on the first page of the amendment, line 19 there, generate contribution tax credits of $1 million. So it caps the certification at $1 million. So your maximum revenue impact, there will be no revenue impact in 03-05. The maximum revenue impact in 05-07 would be $2 million, assuming the Film and Video Office is certified. Has sold those credits and then certified those film production costs. The film production would be eligible for expenses for production after January 1, 2005. So they could go in and begin certifying and say, yes, this film has been here. They can guarantee to that company that, yes, we've got this program and it's going to be available in 6 months. And if you've made expenditures after January 1, 2005, you would be eligible for up to 10% of your costs being reduced. So, again, the key change here between the A6s and the 313 is moving the date back to July 1, 2005.
Okay. Any questions about this amendment? Again, we'll not take any action on this today. Representative Berger?
Paul, what is the motivation for me to buy tax credits here? In other words, is there some kind of real plus to buying these tax credits? I mean, there's got to be some motivation.
I think it comes with a part in the movie. Right?
That's right. Because when we strike up to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Representative Berger, that's the key to this. And you recall from an earlier bill we had, and I can't remember the number. Elizabeth probably does on the child care. A similar kind of program was set up, actually, by this committee bill in 2001. Then you modified that program in 2003 for these credits. But really the key to them being attractive would be allow deductibility of those contributions on your federal return. So you'd be able to deduct on your federal return plus get a state credit. So that would be the incentive for individual companies to do that.
And
it would be an added incentive.
The fiscal impact statement on there.
I have not prepared one, Representative Berger, but the fiscal impact to this piece of the bill would be $2 million for the zero for the 03-05 biennium, $2 million for the 05-07 biennium.
All right, committee, these are for our consideration over the weekend. I wanted to have a chance to talk about these. We will see where the committee wants to go with these on Monday. Anything else for anybody? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Chair.
Do we plan to talk about the substance of the original bill?
You're welcome to talk about the substance of the original bill. Yeah, sure.
Okay. I mean, I would feel a lot more comfortable if one of these said at the top, delete lines 3 through 24 of page 1 and delete pages 2 through 5 and substitute.
Okay. If the committee would let me know if I can kind of get a sense of that between now and Monday, why, I'll follow the committee's lead on that. Okay, fair enough. All right. It's late on Saturday, folks. Thank you very much for coming in at this hour. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 362. And with that committee, we're adjourned until, let's go, 9 o'clock on Monday morning. That'll give us time to get some work done before floor session if we're able. Okay? Thank you very much.